Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by you guys. I'm not going to lie. I thought about recording right after the Lakers game and then catching the tail end of Zion's debut, but I got caught up in the hype and I watched all of the games. So I'm recording this now after the Pelicans lost to San Antonio. Tonight's show, I'm going to talk about the Lakers-Knicks game and kind of what I think we're kind of starting to see as a trend as we get, you know, ready to go into the trade deadline and then eventually the All-Star break. I do want to throw it back briefly to a conversation that Pete and I had about Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and the kids and the analysis of how they've played this year. And now that we saw them actually on a stage in a game that kind of mattered, what the difference that we saw there. Again, only one game, so I'm not going to freak out there. And then I am going to answer a few questions. Let's start, though, with the Lakers beating the Knicks. They beat them 100-92. It was one of those games where the Lakers figured out early on that there was nothing New York could do to really stop them and really kind of ease themselves into the game from that point on. I tweeted after the game that it felt like the Lakers were trying to avoid sweating. Remember when we were kids and there'd be something that you were going to grandma and grandpa's place later that afternoon, but you wanted to step out and play basketball with your friends, and your mom would always warn you, hey, don't you dare sweat, don't you dare get into a sweat. So you would kind of try to float around and yet still have some fun with your friends before you went off to grandma and grandpa's. That's a lot what this game felt like. Like the Lakers all had plans after the game that they definitely did not want to sweat for afterward. The Lakers, like I said, though, they win in New York in the quote-unquote Garden. I do want to give a shout-out to ESPN and to the NBA for kind of surprising me on this one. I thought for sure it was going to be a nationally televised game that nobody wanted to watch, but it wasn't. It was only televised locally. Instead of Lakers-Knicks, they had a pretty fun one nationally on ESPN between the Toronto Raptors and Philadelphia 76ers. And that's the kind of thing that you need to do to you know, get people more interested in the sport. Nobody needs to see the Knicks on national TV. I mean, in complete honesty, the Knicks shouldn't be on national TV again until they win a playoff game. Like, that should, their next playoff game should be their next bout on national TV. If ESPN and the NBA was really serious about pushing the league forward, that does two things for you. That, for one thing, means that you don't waste 15 or 20 or so games on the Knicks on those platforms. And it forces James Dolan to say, I actually have to put together a good product to get put on those stages. Like, that's what I want to be able to see there. I want to give credit where credit is due and the decision to keep this game off of national TV. And trust me, anybody who watched it would tell you that game did not belong on national TV. Davis finishes the game. He still doesn't quite look up to speed. Harrison and Pete and I have a group DM or a group text message. We have a group text and a group DM, and it's basically whatever we feel like, whichever app we feel like opening up in that given moment. Though Harrison makes our lives a lot more difficult by being an anti-Apple person, so I can't even answer our group texts from my computer. So it's going to shock everybody to believe that Harrison would make things difficult on people. But anywho, we were kind of talking about Davis and what we saw there, and Harrison made the observation that it felt like Davis is taking a lot more fadeaway jumpers, and Pete and I both responded by saying, like, just in general, Davis doesn't look quite as explosive. He hasn't looked quite as explosive since he came back. And that's to be expected. Jen was shocked when she found out that Davis was coming back as soon as he did. He hasn't looked himself And, you know, I still think we're probably a week away from him actually looking like himself. I don't think if he has a dunk, he doesn't have very many impressive ones in the last two games. And that's something to watch for. One thing, if you really want to, you know, get down to or dive into the weeds on the way Davis has been moving, really keep an eye when you rewatch or when you actually watch his games, how vertically he plays. The portion of the body that he hurt makes it difficult to have any kind of bend in your back. And if you aren't bending in your back, you aren't going to be able to elevate. And obviously, you know, the most comfortable play, if you can't really bend forward in your back, is to lean backwards on a fadeaway jumper. And I think that's kind of where Davis is at physically right now. LeBron opened up really, really well. But I thought if you want to find a stat that defined kind of his energy towards this game, you could look at his free throws attempted. He shot 3 total. That's not great. And as, you know, as the season has gone, if LeBron is going to set a certain tone with his energy, the Lakers are probably going to match that tone. And the Lakers did just enough to beat the pretty measly Knicks. I think the MyBookie pick of the day, I said if I was giving any more than like 8 points, I would not bet on the Lakers. And the Lakers wound up winning by 8. So there you go. So every so often I say smart things. Hey, that's like my one for the month. So you guys are good to check in till February. But here we are. The last observation I want to make from this game. Well, I guess I have two. One, Kyle Kuzma again looked kind of lost. And Alex Regla made this point on Twitter. And he was just kind of showing frustration at the kind of looks and the way that Kuzma is playing out there. He's doing a lot of floating, not enough cutting, and the kind of shots that Kuzma is taking now compared to when he was averaging 20 points while Anthony Davis was out is a pretty stark contrast. And I think the Lakers need to do more to get Kuzma going. And then, you know, this isn't going to shock anybody, and there's a reason I left this for last. Rajon Rondo is just awful. I can't do this anymore. I can't. If he is still a large part of the rotation after the trade deadline, that Pelinka extension that everybody applauded won't look that great. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what I saw in New Orleans between San Antonio and the Pelicans. And I'm going to talk about this in relation to the young Lakers and the analysis that we've seen there. So it's still a Lakers topic, I promise. But I want to talk about that. And then finally, in the third segment, I'll answer your guys' questions. Today's show is brought to you in part by Indeed. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? How will you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants fast. Also add skill tests to your job posts so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. The library of more than 50 skill tests ranges from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade to your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. So the story this year in New Orleans, other than, you know, when is Zion actually going to play, which, you know, we finally got the answer to last night, has been, wow, look how great Ingram has been, and how did the Lakers F that up so badly? And you know, Pete and I had a pretty good conversation about it and about the way that the Lakers developed their youth while they were trying to build through the draft. And look, this is, you guys who have listened to me long enough know that I am not a Lakers apologist in this respect. I do think the Lakers made some major mistakes in the way that they approached developing their young guys and continue to do so to this day with Kyle Kuzma. So let's get that out of the way. But the thing that I've always kind of been waiting for is, well, I kind of want to see how Ingram looks and how Lonzo Ball looks and how Josh Hart looks and how the New Orleans Pelicans in general look once Zion shows up and they now have expectations all over again. And I think the beginning of the game when the Spurs were able to get whatever they wanted and the Pelicans were like, oh, shit, we actually have to play defense? Like that was a pretty fun wake-up call. And I'm not going to sit here and say that one game is going to define how I think Ingram is going to fit alongside Zion moving forward or anything like that. But in that one game, in this one game, that is all we have to work off of, Ingram goes 6 of 22 from the field, 2 of 8 from three-point range, 8 of 11 from the free-throw line, which is good. Finishes the game a minus 9 with 22 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 turnovers, and a steal. Those are similar-ish numbers to what Ingram was doing last year, right? Wow. How about that? Lonzo Ball finishes the game with 14 points. He was a plus 7. 14 points, 12 assists, 8 rebounds. That's a good game for Lonzo. 4 of 8 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3-point range, 3 of 4 from the free throw line. That's a very good Lonzo Ball game. It's a very good Lonzo Ball game that we saw plenty of last season. Let's go Josh Hart. He finishes the game 3 of 6 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3-point range, 2 of 2 from the free throw line, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 10 points, was a minus 1 on the night. Again, very similar numbers to what we saw last year from all three of those guys. And look, I hate that. I wish we've had a different line or a different cliche to use here, but there is a such thing as looters and basketball riots, right? Like you have that. And so far this season, Ingram has been able to operate with immense space, by the way. Just a ton of modern spacing. He's been able to get to the rim. He's been able to miss shots, have off nights. He hasn't had as many off nights, obviously. He's had a very good season to this point. But there's been nothing really on the line when he plays night in, night out. Last night, there was actually something on the line. You had a lot of people watching. And look at that. Oh, and the court was a lot more jumbled because they had Zion out there for long stretches of the game with Derek Favors or with Jackson Hayes, and they didn't have that modern spacing. And Ingram struggled to get to the rim, and that didn't allow him to get into a rhythm. And you saw a very similar Brandon Ingram game to what we saw last year. And, you know, now maybe New Orleans just says, screw it, we aren't going to stop anybody anyway, so we may as well just play Zion at the five for long stretches. And then you start to see that's when Zion scored his 17 straight points, was when he was playing the five. But if they do that, then okay, yeah, then he and Ingram start to make a little bit more sense. But I've always been a little iffy about declaring Brandon Ingram this completely new player because of the circumstances, not just basketball-wise, not just in terms of what kind of team he had surrounding him. Because, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that Lonzo Ball and Drew Holiday and J.J. Redick and Derek Favors is a pretty good group of players to put around Ingram to allow him to be exactly what everybody who believed in Ingram thought he could be. It's a little bit more complicated, though, when you get a slightly less optimal fit basketball-wise. And on top of that, you pile onto that the expectations that come with playing alongside a Zion Williamson and in a game with playoff implications. It was funny because after the game, you had Jeff Van Gundy talking about how nobody's going to remember Zion's 17 straight points. They're only going to, or he's only going to remember the fact that the Pelicans lost, and he didn't make the point that he needed to make there, was that the bummer in New Orleans losing is that they are fighting for playoff position or to even get into the playoffs. And that one loss that they're going to have against one of the teams that they're competing to get into the playoffs with could eventually matter. But, you know, Jeff Van Gundy sucks at his job, so ergo, he doesn't make that point. I walked away from tonight, and it's something to keep an eye on, and it's going to be interesting to watch how the narrative kind of builds itself here. But I did find it interesting that on a night where the expectations returned and the fit wasn't quite right because of the Zion Williamson and LeBron James. Now, obviously, LeBron's a much, much better player. But Zion Williamson and LeBron James approach basketball in very much the same ways. They are physically empowering, imposing players that just impose their will on defenses because they're bigger and stronger than everybody. They are skilled enough to make guys around them better and still kind of sort of need the ball to be able to do that and don't quite space the floor. And, you know, it's not quite a perfect fit with that player in Brandon Ingram. And then you add to that the expectations and you know, here we are. I just wanted to kind of return us back to the conversation that Pete and I had a couple nights ago, just because it's something to keep an eye on. I think it's an interesting dynamic here, and there are 82 games worth. I didn't want to spend an extra segment on that crappy Lakers win over the Knicks. So I found that interesting, and we'll see if you guys find it interesting too. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to finish off with answering as many of your questions as I possibly can. All right, so the first question here comes from Lakers Kingdom 16. Hey, Anthony and maybe Pete, love the show. Is it logistically possible to convert THT's contract to a two-way and send Devontae Kaycock to the G League permanently in order to open up a roster spot? Or if you waived him, could the G League just pick him back up again? Thanks in advance. The problem with using either of those guys as examples is that the Lakers would be adding an NBA player, not a two-way player, or not a G League player. So if what the Lakers need to do is waive somebody from their 15, their group of 15 NBA players in order to be able to sign another guy. That's just the way that goes. So, you know, technically, when people say, well, you have 17 available roster spots, well, you have 15 and you have 2 two-way spots. And clearing up one of those two-way spots doesn't open up an actual legitimate NBA roster spot. What that means is that, you know, either DeMarcus Cousins, Quinn Cook, Troy Daniels, one of those guys is going to see the boot. And, you know, it's really too bad because in watching, you know, while Rondo was out, Quinn Cook started to play pretty well. He and Alex Caruso specifically have a pretty good rating together. They are very productive as a pairing so far this season. And it's very possible that Cook might be on the outside looking in should Darren Collison come to the Lakers. Now, the counter to, you know, being bummed about Quinn Cook losing his spot is that, well, you're getting a better player, and there's a good chance that Collison and Caruso fit together anyway. So some of that is kind of mitigated. But, you know, I think the best version of the Lakers is without Rajon Rondo. I honestly, even if they don't get Darren Collison, even if they don't trade Kuzma for Derrick Rose, the best version of the Los Angeles Lakers is without Rajon Rondo at this stage of his career. He's that bad. And it'd be one thing if Rondo was as bad as he is and was used as a 15th man, but he's being used right now as like a 7th man. He's playing you know, big-ish minutes, and he's being asked to do a lot. So long as he is as bad as he is and getting that outsized role, it just doubles and triples down on how bad he is at basketball, and it makes him that much worse for the Lakers. So, yeah, I do think there's a situation here where Troy Daniels is probably the guy who gets let go. The Lakers won't waive DeMarcus Cousins because they're still trying to appease Anthony Davis, and you know, it's a bummer. The one would hope that it's not like DeMarcus Cousins is going to get picked up by another team. So one would hope that wouldn't set off Anthony Davis. But here we are. Next question here comes from Hoopa Fiasco. Would you rather have 2 wins over the Clippers in their record, or what we have now, 33-8 record over with those two Clippers losses? I like where the Lakers are right now. I've answered that one before. There are a few other questions like that on here. I think the Lakers are fine where they are. If there's a loss that I would like to get back, it's the Celtics one. Losing the way that the Lakers lost to the Celtics really hasn't sit well with me. And actually, this next listener sums that up, I guess. So T. Brian writes, "This group doesn't deserve repping the purple and gold. I say besides LBJ and AD, Rob should trade all these pretenders. And that includes reprimanding the coaching staff. To lose both games to the Clippers and now the despicable Celtics by 32 points is shameful to the nth degree. Even the kids were able to show Lakers pride and exchange punches with the Celtics to beat them last year. Even Luke, with all his deficiencies, knew not to lose to the Celtics. That was probably the only positive thing that Luke Walton brought to the table compared to this current coaching staff." That was it. Look. It's like there's 2 points that I've made a couple times now, but I'll make them again. One, I'm not going to tell people how to fan. That's the lamest thing that I really don't like it when people tell people not to boo. It depends on the situation. Like I was a little put off when Laker fans were booing D'Angelo Russell. I thought that was kind of weird, but I don't like to tell people how to fan, and you know, for Laker fans out there who have been supporting this team as long as they have. And the thing about supporting the Lakers is that it's probably cost a good number of you people listening right now a good amount of money, right? You have to, if you want to go to a game, and unless you were, you know, unless the last game you went to was back in the 90s or while the Lakers were really bad over the last, you know, 7 years or so, if that was the only times that you went to Lakers games, there's a good chance you spent a good amount of money. And even then, there's a good chance you spent a good amount of money depending on the opponent that the Lakers were playing during those games. So I if you take that into account, I understand the passion that comes into being a Laker fan. The other thing about being a Laker fan is it's grown kind of tiresome on the internet. There's just a different standard that people seem to have for the Lakers and their fans. And, you know, like Dwight Howard, for example, is an interesting test case here where for some reason everybody but Laker fans are allowed to poke fun at Dwight Howard. Everybody but Laker fans are allowed to poke fun at Paul George trying to George Lucas his prequel story. For some reason, the Lakers and the Laker fans are held to a higher standard, and you know, I could see why that would piss off Laker fans. So, because of the financial commitment, because of what it is to be a Laker fan sometimes, and the guff that we kind of have to put up with sometimes, and also because of the standard that the Lakers themselves hold themselves to, I'm not going to tell people, after you watched the Lakers lose to the Celtics, no, that's a step too far. That's a step too far to say that the Lakers blew it and that they don't understand what it means to wear that uniform or to participate in that rivalry. If that pissed you off, Cool. It pissed me off too. It should have. And frankly, the fact that the Lakers didn't really bounce back against the Knicks, like, they got their win, but it wasn't like they punched the Knicks in the mouth at all. They showed up, tried not to sweat. Now they're out to dinner, and here we are, you know. So yeah, fan away, boo away whenever you want to boo. Don't be gross, you know. Don't cuss at players and don't say anything offensive, obviously. But so long as you aren't crossing those lines, I'm never going to tell people how to fan. And if that Celtics game pissed you off, cool. Pissed me off too. Let's go one more. Travi for Prez writes, howdy, Laker fan from OKC here. Thank you both for the entertainment and analysis. After this Boston game, you talked about the analytics not supporting AD at the five so far this season. I've watched a lot of games so far, and it seems like AD's playing time at center typically comes when Rondo is the primary ball handler. I don't know how to look up those stats, but I'm willing to bet Rondo's play is hindering those specific statistics. Thoughts? That's a good theory. I could roll with it. You know, usually if AD is at the five, he's usually surrounded by, you know, a couple shooters and probably Rondo's in there. Quinn Cook's losing all of his playing time basically when Rondo is healthy means that he isn't out there. And I think, like, if you were to try to put together the best point guard, big man, pick and roll on this team, like true traditional point guard, well, traditionally sized point guard, it would probably be between Quinn Cook and Anthony Davis. But seeing as Cook never plays when Rondo is healthy, then yeah, the theory here makes sense. And that's like I was saying a second ago. It's not just that Rondo is bad. It's just like when like post-Achilles Kobe, when he was on his farewell tour. Like, it's not just that Kobe was bad. It's that Byron allowed him to have a 30% usage rate and thus make him one of the least efficient players in NBA history. Rondo is the same kind of way right now, where it's not just that he's really, really bad. It's that Vogel is playing him in this outsized role, and it's making him one of the most detrimental players in NBA history. That's the problem here. And AD's stats, while at the five, if this theory is to be believed, is just another example of that. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete will be back tomorrow. We will be talking about the Lakers hopefully beating the Brooklyn Nets. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.